thanks for coming. I know it's dark outside and cold, so it's good you're inside and it's warm. It's good to do this together with Opera, because I've been very happy about building widgets lately, and I've been very, interestingly, very successful with that as well, because a lot of mobile phone providers have widget competitions right now. So if you look into widgets and you need a free laptop or a free mobile phone, just look around the web, because there's a lot of people giving a lot of money for like small widgets. It's a good new market. And it's especially interesting as you can take the skills that we had over the last few years as web developers, and you can bring them into a new environment. Basically, an environment where we don't have to care about Internet Explorer, which is wonderful for web developers, because we finally, if you look at the widgets, they all look cool because they can use PNGs. And that's a really interesting thing, the amount of time people actually limit themselves in their creativity and in their way of building websites by a browser that should have died years ago, and it's still there. I'm not saying IE9, I'm saying IE6, but sadly enough, we have to deal with that. So I'm talking about some of the things that you can use that we provide and other people provide that makes your life easier as developers. Because I've been web developing for a long time and I'm tired of people doing the same mistakes and making the same, learning the same hard way we've learned in the past, because we don't have to do that anymore. Because web development is confusing enough as it is. I loved this on the way over. I went to Sweden before that. And if you enter I love Sweden in Google Translate and say translate it from Swedish to English, it says I love Canada. And you always wonder how these things happen. And it's just because computers hate us. It's just they don't realize that humans, and they wait for Skynet and these kind of things. So it's really, really hard for computers to understand us. But the bigger problem with web development is that we make it actually harder for ourselves because we want to do things all the time ourselves. A lot of problems have been solved for us. A lot of things are out there that are immediately for you available. And when you go to countries like Romania, for example, or Estonia, you find developers that just happily use out-of-the-box widgets and put them together and write applications within a day rather than writing the best application again by starting from the command line like we do. So today I'm going to show some of the things that you can use immediately to build faster and better web products, because problems have been solved for you and people already. That's very disturbing seeing you doing this here, but it's with a bottle, that's fine. So so quick.
You guys should be used to that kind of
thing. Normally people don't get so excited about things I say, but it's okay, it's a personal thing, it's fine by me. Guys, always the same. So quickly about me, in case you don't know. I've been web developing for about 12 years. I went through the pains of Netscape 3 and Internet Explorer 4. I knew everything about table layouts, and I thought I was really, really good knowing that. And 2 years later, I realized I don't need to know that anymore. But I spent about 7 months of my life testing across different platforms and seeing what's going out there. So I've been doing a good job for 12 years. I've been working for lots of big companies. I've released several international websites in 37 languages on frameworks like .NET, and still I'm sane to a degree. And I've been doing it for a long, long time. So I realized, actually, for me, it makes more sense to get out of the day-to-day grind and get younger guys to do the... Maybe I shouldn't have that in the same pocket as my mobile phone. There should be younger guys that get the chance to build something new. That actually, when you start working for a company like Yahoo, there's outside an amazing kick that you build something and all of a sudden, you know, 300 million people can use this. It also is quite scary, but it's quite interesting to see that for the first time. And I've been doing it in the past, so I'm like, okay, I got to find something new for me. And that is developer evangelism. So my job title is International Developer Evangelist, which is great because you don't have to shave anymore and you can wear white dress robes and these kind of things. And people ask, what the heck does that mean? So I actually wrote a handbook about it called Developer Evangelism. So if you want your company to listen to you more as a developer, there's some really good tips there, because we always, as web developers, we're always blamed about everything that happens. So when something goes wrong on a website, the web developer is to blame, even if it's bad content in the database or it's like a Tomcat error showing up and you're like, oh, this must be the HTML guy doing something wrong. Not really, that was the sysadmin. So a lot of the information that is in there is actually helpful for you to get something more out of your company. I work for developer.yahoo.com, which is, funny enough, at developer.yahoo.com. And this is where we put all the developer stuff that we do in Yahoo. So everything I'm talking about today that is Yahoo, you will find there. So if you don't know the URLs, if you don't want to note them down, you don't have to. These slides are already on my blog, and the notes are already on my blog. So everything I've spent the flight over and the 3 hours I waited in the airport because I missed the first flight doing all this stuff for you. So developer.yahoo.com is a good start. So learning the basics of web development is a very, very important thing. And sadly enough, a lot of people get just thrown into web development. Like, oh yeah, there's HTML, CSS, and JavaScript is easy because if you're a Java developer, these languages are much easier than Java, so you know how to build websites, which sadly enough is not the case. But a lot of people think that way. And it took us about 5 years for back-end developers to take us serious as front-end guys. Because when it comes to front end, our biggest problem is that we have no clue what's going on out there. We build things with web standards, then browsers like IE6 come around and do something completely different with it. Browsers like Opera come around and do something cool with it, except for rounded corners, but that's coming, right? Learning the basics of your job is very, very important. Like, what is HTML? What are CSS? What is JavaScript? Where are the problems in JavaScript? Where are the problems in CSS? How do you understand the concepts of the language before you go out there? So it's not that you start right now and you download jQuery and you build the coolest animation little app there and you call yourself a web developer. That's great. But if the jQuery would fail and you don't know what's going on there, then you're not a developer. You just hope that you develop. And it's very important that you learn the basics from it. And it's so easy nowadays because a lot of websites are out there that help us with that. There's interactwebstandards.org, for example. That's a curriculum that's written for universities about web standards and explains in detail what all these things are. This is Creative Commons. This is out there for free. But people never look at that because you just do a Google search and then go to W3C schools and get like a 5-minute fix of what, hey, now I understood it. No, you understand what implementation, not really what it means. The other side is Opera's web standard curriculum. And that was quite interesting because Chris Mills, my ex-publisher that published my first two books, is at Opera now. And he asked a lot of people if they want to write for the Opera web standards curriculum about the basics of web development. Even things like in JavaScript, what is a loop, what is a condition, what is a module pattern, how can you simulate classes, how you can simulate prototypes, these kind of things. A lot of people said, like, well, I don't write about the basics, so I don't care. And to me, somebody who is a writer who cannot explain the simple things, but only the complex ones, there's something wrong going on there. So a lot of people wrote a lot of good articles on the Opera Web Standards curriculum. It's being translated in different languages as well, so if you're bored, read the Chinese version. But it's a really, really good resource, and I wish people would use it more rather than just like hoping you get like HTML for dummies and then you're a web developer. We have the YDN Theater, and that one is full of really, really cool talk videos and tutorial videos and screencasts about how to build websites. So that's another great thing. If you want to learn JavaScript, there's 5 videos of Douglas Crockford, which explains you from like beginning to end what JavaScript is about, and they're really, really good for training. I know several companies that instead of getting a trainer in, just show people these videos, have a few questions later on, and it's going there. So it's not any more copy and paste and then trial and error, because that's what we used to do in 1997. So like every time a new JavaScript effect came out, we looked at the website and like, okay, cool. So I now copied this and I changed it as much as I can without it breaking, but I have no clue what I'm doing. And that, sadly enough, is still how a lot of people do web development, and this is why the web is crap as it is. This is why we have websites that are just painful to look at and are really hard to use. The biggest problem in web development is that you cannot start with a clean canvas. That's not the canvas element, but that the canvas in, that you want to draw on. You want to be creative with the web, and you have no clue what people use out there. And this is the cool thing about the web, because people might use links, or might use Netscape 4, or might use Internet Explorer 6, or other things that are not browsers. You just have to make sure that somehow they at least get the main content of your site. And that's great, because you have to think about everybody out there. But when it comes to implementing it, it can be really annoying. Like, you don't want to really support Opera 6 and Opera 9 at the same time, because some of the things have changed so much over time. At Yahoo, we said this as well. We looked through our stats, and we found like over 1,200 different browsers in different configurations. And there's just no way we can give all of them the same experience. That would be just stupid. So we started with something called the graded browser support, And a graded browser support defines which browsers we support as an A grade. And we say, like, this browser is capable, and this browser knows what JavaScript and CSS is. So we give it JavaScript and CSS, and we test across different platforms on these browsers. On the other browsers that we have, we basically we have a sniffing script in PHP on the server, or in Java as well on other platforms, that don't give them CSS and don't give them JavaScript because they're badly behaved browsers. They choke on JavaScript, they choke on CSS, so we don't give them that. Which makes a lot more sense than saying, like, oh, we support everybody and test across every platform. That's just, nobody can claim that they tested across all platforms and all browsers, because this is something that drives you crazy. I mean, PPK tries to do that on mobile phones right now. He tests every mobile phone browser on every mobile phone that he has, and he's been doing it for a year and still is halfway through. And with desktop browsers, it's the same thing. So think about the developeryahoo.com articles GPS. So if you have clients and they ask you, like, oh, which browsers do you support? Read this and send it to them and talk about this kind of thing, because if you say we're going to support all of them, they're going to find one person that has this really messed up browser and say your application doesn't work. I worked in an agency in London, and we built this .NET application. I was lead developer, five guys working for me, and we spent 7 months building this really, really cool app. And then the CEO said, oh, it doesn't work. I'm not going to sign it off. There's not going to be any money for that. And we're like, why doesn't it work? What's going on? It looks awful. Okay, why does it look awful? And we looked at his computer and used IE5. And he wouldn't upgrade for security reasons, of all things. We looked at it and we said, like, what can we do about this? Can we fix the .NET solution for IE5? Yeah, right. So what I did is I looked at his, I talked to the IT people in that company, looked at his IP number, and every time his computer connected to our application, we showed him screenshots. This is exactly what he wanted. He just looked at the website. He didn't even click anything. He just wanted to see if the first thing looks right, and then he signed it off. He did this for 7 months, and then another guy came in and replaced him and replaced the browser with something different as well. And we were happy. We're like, great. So sometimes you have to play with the system and not get caught. So websites are not meant to look and work the same everywhere. This is whoever claims this, every designer that comes up to me and says, like, this has to work the same on every browser, hasn't understood the flexibility of the web. The really cool thing about the web is that actually our interfaces can accustom themselves to different user agents and then give people the different experience. So if I have a text browser, I get a text website. Great. If I have a graphical browser, I get images with it. If I have a new browser, I get drop shadows around the corners and all this stuff with it as well. It's the same product, but it actually applies itself to the abilities of the user agent. And this is what the web is about. So if you try to make it look the same everywhere, you're actually not playing to the strength of the web. You're just trying to put print onto the web. So you might as well upload JPEGs, which happens as well. One thing I want everybody to understand is that if you want to build websites nowadays, the best thing to do is start with a library after you understood the basics, as I said. If you just use a library and replace any JavaScript knowledge with the library, that's dangerous, because JavaScript libraries might change as well. And I don't want to hire people in 2 years' time where I have to ask, instead of, like, do you know JavaScript? I have to ask, do you know jQuery 1.2, YUI 3.5, Dojo 1.6? That's what Java developers are for. We don't want to have that same thing on the front end. So what any of these libraries do, and what they really, really want to do for us, is that they make browsers better by fixing problems in browsers that we should not have to know. Like really, really stupid implementation problems that, for example, in Internet Explorer, input type crash used to crash the browser. In Internet Explorer, for example, if I put an ID, an element with an ID, the element with a name into the element, the get element by ID gets also this element with a name. If I have a form element with the name length, I cannot read out the length of all the attributes anymore, because that overrides this one. So all these stupid JavaScript implementation things in browsers and IE, we don't have to know anymore. This is what libraries are for. These are the stopgap solution until browsers are good, which might never happen, but it's at least we don't have to worry about this. And we're always so proud about knowing all this. Oh, I know all the bugs of Netscape 4. Yeah, well done. Great. Maybe you should get a girlfriend. These kind of things. So CSS frameworks and front-end libraries make one thing, and they make our work predictable and allow us to use web standards without catering for browsers. Because what keeps web standards from being used is browsers. It's bad implementation of browsers and browsers not being upgraded. And that's quite scary how many reasons people have for not upgrading. And it's just, some companies painted themselves in the corner by telling people 8 years ago that you don't have to upgrade your infrastructure ever. And that's just not working on the web. If you build your code based on libraries, you can fix your product for the next browser by upgrading the library. This is as easy as it is. And the iPhone came around that nobody expected. Google Chrome came out that nobody expected. And Google Chrome is not the same as Safari. There's differences between those two as well. And libraries actually fix that for you. So if you want to make sure that you're building for the future and not for the past, building on top of a library is a good idea. And I don't care which one you use, as long as one of the big ones that are supported by big companies and prove themselves in the market. This Dojo, jQuery, MooTools, whatever. I mean, Facebook uses MooTools, for example. Didn't know that until last week. If you choose to do everything yourself, good luck. It's amazing how many people are very proud about building everything themselves. Like, oh yeah, I've written... You go to like Python conferences or PHP conferences and they're like, who here built his own content management system? And all hands go up. And you know for a fact that all these content management systems are on the web and nobody cares about them anymore. And the original writer doesn't maintain them anymore. So they are another security hole in the web. What I want to do on the web is build interfaces that work and not interfaces that expect people to, that give you buttons and then the buttons don't do anything. The first thing to understand about building interfaces that work is actually how do people work? How do people try to solve problems? How do people try to fulfill a task? And this is where we have the YPattern library, the Yahoo Pattern library. This is explanations that's great for designers that shows you here's a task that people want to do on a website and here is how we in user testing found out what people like best. Like how do we pick a date from a form field? How do you select something from a map? So we've done user testing, and the results are actually in these patterns. So if you want to write everything yourself, cool. But at least look at these patterns, because you want to build something that people want to use. And you, as the developer, are the worst tester on this planet. I mean, I've been mentoring at Seed Camp, and I had these guys come in, and I'm like, this is completely unusable. I have no idea what you guys are on about. Well, you have no idea. My friends like it, and I like it a lot as well. And I'm like, well, I hope your friends are really, really rich because you're going to live on your five friends rather than millions of people that should use your product. So think about mom and dad users that don't want to use the computer but just want to have something quickly solved. And this is where these patterns come in. They also come with a stencil kit. So if your designers want to come up with their own little calendar control or something like that, send them this because it makes their life easier and it makes your life much easier because these stencils actually are available as widgets as well. The next thing I've been talking about for a long time right now, and I'm very adamant about, is that we should stop building things in the web or putting things on the web and hope that people come, and actually start using the web as developers as well. So when you start a new product, a content management system should be in the middle of it because you want to separate the content from the rest of your application. That's the basic principle of being able to internationalize, localize, and maintain your product. You don't want to be the guy that people call up if there's a comma error somewhere in the content. That has to be maintained by the guy that writes the content rather than yourself. So a content management system, I don't care which one is in the middle, open source would be good. And then you can actually use services that are on the web that we've used in the last few years that solve problems, again, for us really easily. Google Maps. Why should I put a map or design a map in Illustrator and write how to get to our website, how to get to our office in my own text? I just give it a Google map. I give it the address. Say Google Maps. People can click on it. They get a map and they can say where they start from to get to our office. Because I never know where the people come from. So you got all these pages where like, if you come from there, 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 any map product does that for us. We don't have to do that anymore. And it's something that doesn't have to be maintained. Flickr for photos. Why should I have to batch convert photos on my own server? I just upload them to Flickr. I get them back in five different sizes. I even get them back with tags. I can back get them back with like people found in these photos. All this meta information that comes from a community that's very, very interested in photography that I would never have the time to. A friend of mine had a gallery for people with disabilities, like painters that had cerebral palsy and these kind of things. And he said, like, oh, nobody's finding my website and I can't hire an SEO consultant. I don't know what's going on there. And I'm like, well, how are the descriptions of your pictures? What's going on there? And he's like, oh, we don't have any big descriptions there because we don't have time to write them. Okay, put all your photos on Flickr. We promote it a bit with friends there and see that people write good comments or write good things and tag these photos. And then take the Flickr API, get this information back, put it in your page. Bam, people found him in Google because he had text content in there that was relevant, that was crowdsourced by a community he didn't even know. So that's how you can use the web nowadays. LinkedIn for CVs, YouTube for videos, upcoming for events, Twitter for small updates, Delicious for links. All of these systems are optimized to do one task at a time. Your system doesn't have to write a little module for each of them. Just use the web. And we get to all this data by using APIs. And APIs is this program of web from some month ago, which was 1,447 APIs. So all of this data is available for us. For me, the web is like this sweet shop of data, not websites, not code. For me, it's like information that is structured that I can use and reuse. And when you build something, always think data first. Where do you put your content? Where does your content come from? Because if your website doesn't have content that changes constantly or at least gets upgraded constantly, you will not be successful. People are like, they don't come back just to look at your logo again or to look at the nice pictures that you have. They come back for content. And search engines like new content all the time as well. That's why blogs that have 7 updates a day are much more successful than blogs that have 1 update a week. So the problem is that if you use several APIs, that the complexity of your product increases with the number of APIs you use. Because all of these APIs, once again, have been built by developers that want to do everything themselves rather than reading up on best practices on API design. So every API has different ways to authenticate, expects different parameters, and returns data in different formats. So when you use more than 3 APIs, you spend like 2 weeks just reading through documentation, trying to authenticate, trying to get data in, data out, and so on and so forth. And we had the same problem in Yahoo. We have everything we built internally is built on APIs, just for scalability reasons. If you got 3,000 visitors a second, on websites, you just cannot go to the database directly. You have to go through an API that gets cached, memcached, whatever. And we realized internally, if we use our own APIs, we sit in meeting rooms for 3 weeks and try to find out who wrote this API, and it might have been 10 years ago in our case, and we didn't want to think about this anymore. So we came up with a system called YQL. YQL, and this is the console of YQL, which is the easiest way to start playing with it, and you don't have to because it's a web service in the end. It's a SQL-style language to mix the web, to mix APIs, to mix content of the web, and get it back as XML or as a JSON, only to really, really what you need. So in the console, you define your query. You select your output, which is either XML or JSON with a callback parameter for JSONP, and then you basically copy and paste the URL. And you can use that URL in a browser window, you can use that URL in PHP, in JavaScript, wherever you want to do it. So you can select any of our APIs and mix them together and get them back as a callback. And this is how easy it is. So for example, let's find London on this planet. Because if I want to say, for example, I want photos from London, I could say, go to Flickr, search for London. Okay, the first 5 results are Jack London. If I want to say Paris by night, I find Paris Hilton and I don't want to show these pictures. So you want to make sure that what you're talking about is really the geographical location. And we have a geo API in Yahoo that's called, in this case in YQL, geo.places, where the text is London, UK. So that one gives me back all the information about London we have, like latitude and longitude, what country is it in, what part of the world is it in, how the expanse of it is, all the information that we have. But what's really important is that we give everything on this planet that we index a number, which is a Where on Earth ID. And this is supported by Flickr, and this is also supported by Twitter now. And that makes it much less ambiguous than just having a latitude and longitude. Like having a latitude and longitude of Oslo, for example, the center of Oslo, might be the center of Oslo, but also might be a pub that is exactly on that spot. So to distinguish between the two, we need an ID. And that's why we came up with the Where on Earth ID. So this is using one API and getting the data back. So I can take this result then and find photos taken in there by using Flickr Photo Search, which is another API shortcut, where the Where on Earth ID which is returned from select Where on Earth ID from GeoPlaces where text is London. So I define London, then I get photos from it. This only gives me a few information about the photos, but I also want to have the owner, I want to know all the EXIF data, if the flash was on, how big the picture is, and so on and so forth. So I run it through another API and say select star from Flickr Photos Info, where photo ID in select photo search, select GeoPlaces. So you can take any API and remix them that way. If you wanted to do that in PHP, that's like 2 hours, 3 hours, just reading the documentation of the different APIs, authenticating with OAuth, and then building your information that way. Then you can, instead of select star, you can filter down to only the things that you need. Select farm, ID, secret, owner, real name, server, title, URLs, content, and so on and so forth. And all of this is really easily done in the console because you see the data and you can filter down. And we can go to a quick demo of that later. Then you see the output, select format JSON, define a callback, and copy and paste the URL. So this is something you don't have to do. This is what the console does for you. And then you can pop it in a script block, as you can see down here, and get JSON as the callback. And then you write like 5-6 lines of a DOM scripting, or if you want to use jQuery, it's probably 3 lines. And you have photos from London, geolocated from Flickr for you, without knowing the Geo API, without knowing the Flickr API, but just being able to get the data from them. And that's the really, really cool stuff. That's what you want to do. I don't want to read documentation of APIs. I want to get data out. So this is Profit. This is what it would look like. And the URLs are available as well, so you can actually try it out. It does work. And then the first thing that people always say, like, is this Yahoo only? Like, okay, Flickr is, Geo is, and it's not. Because it's a completely open system, YQL. The source is not available yet, but we're working on that. And you can use any data on the web. So you can say select star from Atom, CSV, feed, HTML, JSON, microformats, RSS, XML, whatever you want to find on the web that is structured, you can get back in YQL. So I found this website, for example, on a university site in Glasgow that had like jokes about television. And it was an unordered list. And I'm like, cool, let's do this. So all I did in YQL is get the information back from the HTML page, wrote this few lines of JavaScript, a bit of CSS, and turned this into a widget for a page. So I can now get a funny TV fact, and when I click the button, I get another fact. And the database of that widget is actually that HTML website that is somewhere else and maintained by somebody else as well. So if you have a content management system that spits out HTML and you want to use the information somewhere else, you can easily do that. So let's show a quick example for that. Let's take the vg.no. First of all, what happened there? I mean, is the designer blind or what's... I mean, this is just unbelievable, the sizes of these things. Oh, sorry. I didn't want to show it to you, but it's just... I mean, what? This resizes it? Yes. So this is the website and this is data. So I can go to the YQL console now and I can say select star... from HTML, where URL equals that website. And that one will go to that website, get the HTML, run it through through HTML tidy of the W3C to turn it into HTML in case it's been done with .NET or something like that, and get me the information back. So this is the HTML that I get right now. This is can easily done with in PHP with curl as well. But where it gets interesting then is then I can actually filter it down by XPath. So I can say, and the XPath equals, give me just the headlines on the third level and the links inside them, because this is normally how these things are built. So this one now gives me only the links on this website that are inside headlines. So it gives me the text of this data fact back. So I can take this now, for example, and say I only want the content of this of these links. Then I get only the text back. And as I don't speak any Norwegian, I could take this information now and put it in another API where I can say, like, select star from Google Translate, where Q in select content and target equals English. So this one now goes to the website, gets the HTML back, extracts only the headlines, the links inside the headlines. For each of these headlines, goes to the Google API, translates it for me, and gives it back. So anything that happened here is in this diagnostics block. So you see it went to vg.no, loaded it, and then it went through gtranslate lots and lots of times to translate this. And in the end, I get the data back is more or less English, because a lot of those things couldn't be translated. It's much better in other languages. Try that in just HTML and PHP and JavaScript, and you would have wasted a day. And this is how easy it gets to use any data out there. So all of these tables down here are the information that you can get. So this is open tables that people have written. You can do, for example, a New York Times article search. So description, you do select star from New York Times article search where text equals taxes. So that one gives me the archive, and it says, like, required keys are query, facets, and API keys, so text should be query. So it gives you real error messages as well, not like Internet Explorer telling you that undefined is not defined or null is not an object. So you get all this information back, and you get the articles back, and you can mix and match the whole web in this system, and once you've done it, you just copy and paste this out into a new browser, and you get the data back as XML, and you can do whatever you want with it in PHP, in Python, in Java, if you really, really want to. But this is basically what we can do with this. So YQL can be extended by writing an open table, and that's basically an XML schema that points to your data endpoint, tells us what is the parameters that go in, what comes out. That's all I have to do. So what the benefit of that one for you would be that you can use YQL's infrastructure for actually API development. So if your company has data but you don't want to have a server farm, you can write an open table and say, like, hey, our API is through YQL, which we do with our new systems like Yahoo Meme, the Twitter thing for Brazil, exactly uses YQL. They don't have any own server farm. They just go through that server to do that. I talked to the National Maritime Museum in London. They have an API now available to get all the data in the museum for you, and the API server is a desktop machine on somebody's desk, because YQL does the caching for it and is faster on the web than probably your server is anyways. So you can move JavaScript to the server side as well with that. So because the open tables allow you to have embedded JavaScript that runs on the YQL server with Rhino, and support XML natively with E4X and other fun things in the W3C specs. So instead of writing JavaScript and hoping that the browser or Internet Explorer knows what to do with it, you can run it on the command line. You have full access to the JavaScript specs. Out of a sudden, it doesn't suck anymore writing JavaScript. Out of a sudden, you don't have to worry about security holes in the browser because it's run on a command line for us. So the photo search that I showed earlier in YQL inside an open table would be this. So you say the query is select farm ID and so on and so forth. Then if the location is not null, you do the row ID lookup as well. Then you do a y.query, which is like a YQL call. And then you have this native XML stuff going on. So you, instead of having to do a document create element or create node or whatever in libraries, you just put a URL in there. And then you just put an li and a, you set the attributes, and you put your whole your XML together, and you give it back as a response object. So you can use JavaScript to write mashups and then put them on the server side and make them into an API. So before that, you always had to know some server-side language and be a wizard, and nowadays you can use JavaScript for that and you're done. So with this table now available that I've written and I put on GitHub, it's getting the same photos would be now select star from Flickr photo list where text is me and location is UK and amount is 20. And instead of getting random data back from Flickr that I have to mix and match into a UL anymore, it comes back as a UL. And I can just, in JavaScript, I can do a inner HTML, and that's all I need to do. In PHP, I can just use curl and do some cleaning up, like delete all the stuff around the ULs, and then I echo this out. I don't have to do any of the DOM creation stuff, and that's always slow. That's the thing. It's like when you do performance things, maybe you want to ship out some of your JavaScript, your heavy JavaScript, to the server side. All the open tables are GitHub, YQL tables, so you can take a look at them, copy them, change them. The documentation is at developer.yahoo.com/YQL, and it's actually, it gets me very excited. That's why I'm normally too talking too much about it. But if you look at my blog, I've been doing YQL things every single day right now. Do you know 24 ways? It's this advent calendar of like cool web stuff. And my article this year is coming out on the 17th. And what I've done there is I've written this website here. So basically, it's me on the web, and it gets the data from my blog, it gets my links, it gets my photos, it gets my videos. And all of that happens on the YQL server. So if I tried to do that in PHP, it would render it one by one. It would be really slow. So if I reload this page right now, it tries to find it, zack, that's the rendering. So this one went through 5 different APIs and cached all of them on the YQL server for me, so my interface is totally immediate. So if you take a look at the source of this, I just basically get my different queries that I want to have, select description from RSS, select farm from Flickr, select title from RSS, another RSS, then point to the YQL endpoint, assemble the query as a query multi, and then do a curl call, and I get the data back and just write it out as different ULs and put them together. Then I do an undo YouTube markup crimes because YouTube has table layouts in their RSS output, which was scary to see. And then I just use some CSS, and this is the whole website. So this website maintains itself by me using the web, by me bookmarking something, by me uploading a photo to Flickr. And this is the whole code that you have to use to make this thing work. And it will be available on 24 ways, and it will be usable for you as well. And look, it uses drop shadows and rounded corners. It's amazing, isn't it? Okay, enough bashing of Opera. Another thing, building with blocks. So instead of building interfaces from the start, instead of thinking like, ooh, I write a UL now and then I turn it into an image gallery and then I turn it into something else, look around the web and find things that have been solved for you. This is now going to be a lot of Yahoo stuff, but this is how we roll. We have 26 locations. We have thousands of developers. You cannot just allow any developer to do whatever they want and then build something and then hope it works. Because if we send a product that we built in America to Brazil, to England, to France, to localize, we have to have a way of actually building these things that is predictable rather than like having to read through somebody else's code and understand what they've been doing. So one of the main things that people always bitch about, especially when you're on a Ajaxian like I am and the other JavaScript guys that say, oh, CSS is so hard, it's a pain to build CSS layouts. If you don't want to understand CSS, don't write CSS. Find somebody that really wants to understand CSS and partner with them. If you still want to build something, there is a CSS layout generator in YUI. YUI has the CSS grids, which is something that we build our websites with. So we wanted to solve that CSS problem once and for all for the layout bit, and then we don't have to worry about it anymore. And the layout generator, the grid builder, allows me to define what I want to see. And there's a what you see is what you get editor to build the thing together, and then you get the data back. So if I look at that in the browser, I say, okay, I want a size of 950 pixels. I want a sidebar of 180 pixels. I want the first row to be 100. Then I want another row with 2 columns. Then I want another row with 3 columns. And show me the code, copy and paste, and I'm done. This is how easy it is to do a layout that is working across all the browsers that we put in the graded browser support. As you can see, it also has YARIA support, so accessibility has also been partly thought of already. And it's hosted by us on a CDN network, which means if your visitors are from Norway, they get the CSS from Norway. If your visitors are from Brazil, they get it from Brazil. If your visitors are from China, they get it from Singapore. So you don't have to worry about them being speedy because they already come down speedy on the line. You can copy and paste that into an editor, and you have your layout. And this is what I do nowadays because, frankly, I'm bored of writing CSS. I'm bored of making browsers work and making it work for Internet Explorer 6 as well, not only browsers. It's a good idea to do this. So, for example, a little application that I built with, which is exactly the same stuff that I showed before, which is finding photos of a certain location, plotting it on a map, and having an image carousel next to it. All of that is widgets that come out of the box with YUI that have been tested across these browsers, that are based on the findings that we had in user testing, so they're keyboard accessible, and they really perform the way how people expect them to, which is sometimes completely different to what you think they should be working as, because people out there are different to us. So this was like a five-minute job, using a YQL query and then putting together with the CSS layout editor. The only thing I had to do was change the colors, and it was done. Same here, I've got a menu, I've got tabs, I've got an image carousel, all of them work together, really easily put together. Now, you have this with every library, but the problem is, like, are these things really tested with users? I mean, you look for an image carousel in jQuery, you find like 400 of them, and you don't know if they will work in the next browser, and it's, I'm not saying that you shouldn't use them, I'm just saying, like, jQuery UI is a better resource than jQuery in the wild, because these have been tested by companies like IBM, by companies like Facebook. So think about things that have been proven in real life rather than just something that looks really cool. In this case, all of the things that we have, all of the widgets that we have that we use on the Yahoo network are available for you as YUI widgets for reuse. This is Yahoo Mail rebuilt with YUI widgets. So all of them are FreeBSD licensed, can be used by you commercially any way you want to. And this is how you could build. You could build Yahoo Mail, the interface. The server farm is a bit of a different issue. But people have been complaining about this example that is on the YUI side that they can't read their mail because they just saw it looks like mail. It must be mail. Which it wasn't, of course, but it just shows you that these widgets are out there, and instead of having to spend 3 weeks trying to understand how a drag and drop works or how a menu works or a rich text editor, which is the biggest pain to ever develop, these things are all out there. The other cool thing about them is that they're event-driven. So instead of having to rewrite the code, if you want to change them, you just can listen for an event and prevent it from doing the normal thing and write your own functionality. That's something we learned from Flash, because Flash worked for that like years now. Instead of having to call a function from another function, you just listen for an event and you write an event listener that overrides the original functionality and you're done. And it fires lots and lots and lots of events. So it says like before init event, change body event, change header event, context mouse out event, and so on and so forth. All of these things, every time something happens to a widget, you have a handle into it, you can change it. And that's very, very powerful. It means you don't have to rewrite our code, which is a stupid idea. If you use a library and you mess around with the library source code, you cannot upgrade anymore. That's the classic thing that people do with WordPress, and I fell into that problem as well. I used WordPress for like 5 years now, and the first, that doesn't work, that doesn't work. I wrote lots of PHP inside WordPress, fixed it, couldn't upgrade. Bam, had my server hacked. Not the server, but I had like spam injection because the security upgrades that WordPress needed were not possible anymore. And the same happens to a JavaScript library if you mess around with it too much. YUI also comes with a lot of documentation. And this is partly generated from the source code, but also a lot of like Hello World step-by-step explanations on how to do things. It also comes with over 300 examples of how to use the things. And let's face it, this is where you're going to start. You're going to take an example and then mess around with it until it does what you want to do. And when you get stuck, you go to the main documentation. And this is something that costs a lot of time but makes a lot of sense for people to do. So if you just want to play with YUI, go to the examples page and just click through them and see what's going on there. And there's lots of explanations in there as well. So the last thing I want to talk about is that you can build things right now that will run on Yahoo, which is not that known yet. But much like you can build applications that run inside Facebook, much like you can build applications that hopefully one day will be on the application store of iTunes, you can actually build applications right now with the Yahoo application platform. In the application platform, we allow you to build applications with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, completely standards compliant, and they will run inside our homepage, and in the My Yahoo, and later on maybe other products as well. To start with that, you have to go to the Yahoo dashboard and you have to start a new application, and they're called the open applications here. So you start this application there, then you start giving us information what the name of your application is, what it does, where it's supposed to go, and then you actually give us a data endpoint where your application runs, and you have a small view default content. So the small view is the thing that will be shown on the Yahoo homepage when you actually go for it. And this one is a bit static because it has to be really, really performant, because you think 300 million people are going on this site, which could potentially all open your little system. So we cache the small view for you. And the full view just points to your server then. So that's like a Facebook application that basically gets the data from there. Problem with Facebook application or any other application, net framework, MySpace, iGoogle, all these things, is that the security, of course, is an issue. If we don't want you to be able to run any JavaScript to read out the cookies of our users and log in as them and actually get their, I don't know, money or whatever. So we had to find a way to make that secure. And what we've done is we used Kaha. Kaha is a Google invention that was originally written for Open Social. And Kaha has been around for quite a while, but it's not quite out of the box, not used, because not many people supported it fully. So we made Kaha together with Google. We made Kaha work for us. And Kaha basically means it's a preprocessor. You take your HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. You run it through that preprocessor. The preprocessor takes everything out that is evil, like custom attributes, eval in JavaScript. It doesn't allow any of the things that can be used to actually inject code and make your applications insecure, which can be terribly annoying because we've been writing this crap for years because browsers expect it to work that way. So a lot of browser hacks that we had to do, like underscore hacks or star hacks in CSS, for example, are not allowed by Kaha, which is a bit restrictive, but this is basically the way we have to deal with it right now because we want to make these things secure. And making the web secure is probably the biggest challenge of next year because it's just not. It's just that there's like 15 different worms on Facebook right now. There's an amazing amount of stuff I can do just by putting some JavaScript in a line. I gave 2 talks on security this year, and twice I basically live on stage hacked people's Twitter account and got their updates, although they were protected. Because browsers don't care where JavaScript comes from. It gives all JavaScript the same right. So I can inject things and I'm done. We have car-ready code examples for you to look at, and they have great examples of saying like, this can't be done and this shouldn't be done. And examples actually how to work around these problems. If you don't want to understand this and what do you want to do in an app? You really just want to have some Ajax calls and you want to have some drag and drop maybe, things like that. That's why we came up with the Yahoo markup language. The Yahoo markup language, like Facebook markup language, it allows you to actually build things that work, that have functionality without having to write the functionality in PHP or JavaScript yourself. So you've got tags like YMLA, which is a link that gets an Ajax request and puts it back into the page. And form audio we had to put in there because embed can be abused in Internet Explorer, so we couldn't allow embed. We had to go for the object thing, which we should have done years ago because embed is the only thing that IE needs, no browser needs. Friend selector would allow you to tie into the Yahoo Social API to basically get the friends of the user that is currently logged in. So you don't have to call the API, get the information out there. You just put a friend selector in there and you're done. You have YML share, send this to your friends. You have YML profile pic and user patch. If you just want to display the user right now, you don't have to write a function that gets this information. It's already packed in for you. So for example, I wrote this application called Tweet Translate, which is a demo application that I've done for that. And this is how it would look like. It's a YML form, and the YML form points to a PHP script, and it's just a valid HTML form, and it has a results ID down there that explains things. So the parameters are the script to call, and then the results is the ID that will be replaced. So instead of having to write an Ajax request, the YML form does that automatically for me. It gets all the information from the form, it packs them up properly, sends it to twitterlist.php, gets the information pack, and when the information comes back, it has a results and puts them in there. There's also a timeout option, and there's also an error option. So, because every time you do Ajax and you just hope it happens, that's a very stupid idea. The source code is available on the web as well. I mean, it's terribly easy. Once again, do a YQL call to the translation to the Twitter search atom output, and then I basically do a search, do a curl call, get the information back, and loop it out. Then I create YMLA tags, which basically are links that do an Ajax call for me, and those point to another system, and the other system is once again a YQL call with curl that just gets the translated text back from Google for me. So I've written this, and then I basically put it on my server, the 2 little API calls. copied and pasted the YML that I've written into the SmallView default content, pointed the main page to my server where the tweettrends.php is, and I have my application running. I get an application ID for it, which is up here. And if I want somebody right now to install this, we will have something like an app store in the next year as well. I think February is what we say that's coming out. And we have a competition running right now who's going to build some stuff for us. And once I sent this link down there to people, the yahoo.com ad yap ID is the ID of it, they will get prompted on the Yahoo homepage if they want to install this application and if they're okay with it, if it wants to access their friends and these kind of things. And once that's done, it basically runs inside the Yahoo homepage. And now what that one application does, I can search Twitter and then I can translate it into another language, which was great for me when I was in Tokyo, for example, and people were tweeting about my talk and I had no idea if they talk about my talk or if they insult my mother or whatever. So I used this there. So this is a simple example how you can use YML and a bit of PHP to write an application that runs on Yahoo. And that's quite cool to reach 300 million people out there. You also get stats of how many people have accessed your application, how many people have installed it and deinstalled it. If you want to use our social graph, if you want to dig into people's address books or Yahoo Mail, then you have to go through OAuth. So you have to define the permissions that you want to have, which systems should your application actually access, and it creates a consumer key and shared secret, which is a normal OAuth call for you. So every time you change this, there will be new consumer key and shared secret. If you want to use our social SDK, social graph, the easiest way is to get the social API SDKs. So these ones are available in PHP, Java, and some other languages. It also supports the REST APIs of OpenSocial. So it's also, if you're really sick and you want to use .NET and Ruby, you can do that as well. The SDK itself is available on GitHub and is maintained there as well. So if you have bug fixes, you can put them in there and tell people, hey, please fix that. And once you've done that, your application has access to our social graph. So this is the mysocial.php demo page from the Yoast documentation that now gets all my updates. And as you can see, I use Twitter. I don't use Yahoo for updates, but that's me. So to lots of stuff to put it together. YUI in a nutshell. It's a system that Yahoo uses to build its websites. It's constantly tested to work for the largest amount of users. It's free, open source, and covers everything from design patterns to out-of-the-box widgets. It's modular, and you can use only what you need. You can either host yourself or get it from network or distributed servers. And that's a lot of stuff to give out for free. Why do we do this? Because you guys are cleverer than us. You guys find problems that we don't know about. By giving out our code, and I do this personally as well, by making my code open source and allowing other people to play with it, I hear about use cases, I hear about bugs that I had no clue about. And I couldn't fix because I couldn't reproduce them. But you can if you use YUI, and then you tell us, hey, in our configuration, this didn't work and that didn't work, and then we have a chance to make it better. So by giving things out for free, we actually make sure that things become better. And we all want to build a better web, because I'm tired of hacking for browsers, and I don't want to anymore. YQL is a web service that allows you to mash up any data on the web from various sources with a simple SQL-style language. You can filter the data down to what you need, and you can convert the data with server-side JavaScript before returning it. Data providers can use YQL to publish an API on the web on top of Yahoo's infrastructure and cloud storage. What I haven't covered yet is that you can store things in YQL as well now, and you can also do update, insert, and delete. So it's becoming more and more a simulation of filled SQL in YQL, but instead of accessing a database, it accesses the web, which is pretty cool to do things with. Yap, in a nutshell, it's the Yahoo application platform, which allows to build applications that run on the Yahoo homepage and other properties. You can dive into our social graph and promote your applications, and you can create highly secure web apps as Yap uses Caja to ensure code quality. Yap is also open social compliant, so in the end, why should we all make a different application platform when you can support open social? And I'm spent, and that's all I wanted to talk about. So I thank you very much. Are there any questions?
In YQL, can you do meta queries like getting the number of items in the result set or limit the result set?
Yeah, you can limit the result set. You cannot, depending on what the API does, you can read out the results set. So anything that is in the XML is available to you. So if it returns the full result set, then you can actually read that out. You can limit the results by saying you can limit them before they get pulled. So this one now, for example, would say only give me two results from the server. So this one accesses the search and only gives me two back. But I could also say give me 100 and limit them to two. If I want to do pagination or things like that. So that both gives me only the things that you need. I also can do a sort and I can do a truncate. So this is one way of limiting it. As said, the whole result, whatever the API gives us back, we can have. What we don't allow is actually get access outside of the API, which is quite obvious. So the same here, it's like in search, instead of having the whole data, I just said title and abstract here. But you get all the information back, like abstract, click URL, date, size, title, and so on and so forth. This is getting really interesting if you take an API that is really deep, like Flickr Photos Info, for example, where you have all kind of noted things. So if I, for example, only want to have the tags, I don't even have to know in which depths of the XML that is. I can just say, give me the tags, because it automatically drills down in the XML for me. If there's different tags, I can also say, like, only give me photos.tags, and you can filter down to all the information that you need directly in the output. As always, quite fun just to see how many of these different APIs come in every day. Microsoft Bing, so you can do a Bing search and a Google search next to each other right now and try out what's going on there and seeing how that works. We have things like WordPress as well, so you have a WordPress post API, which would allow you to insert into WordPress title, description, blog URL, username, password, and you can actually blog from YQL. You can update your Twitter status from YQL with another open table. And all of these things are possible. It makes more sense to use the YQL storage because you don't want your password in the wild. But if you have to go through HTTPS with that anyway, so an HTTP sniff, I wouldn't get your password. I could show it now, but I don't want to show you the exact same password. Yeah?
What's the status of testing of the YUI and all these tools?
It's quite interesting that you asked this because we're working together with Opera and some other companies right now to bring out a graded browser support for mobile phones. What we don't have is a YUI for the phone, but for iPhone, for example, YUI works easily. If you just go for the upper class, you can actually use YUI, but we don't have any hardcore testing going on with it because most people, when they build web applications right now for mobile phones, they go through something like Opera Mini because it actually keeps you sane. Because if we think 5 browsers on the web are bad enough, there's about 20 of them on mobile phones in all different configurations, and it's just not fun. And unless you are PPK that has fun testing all these things, there's better things to do with your life. Performance is actually quite fun because the YUI 3 that is now out and actually is completely open source. So you can actually be part of YUI now by going to yuilibrary.com. And this one is a total rewrite of YUI 2 for our new homepage. So the performance has been, I think, cut in a third in terms of like so much faster than it is right now. It's also sandboxed into different smaller components, and so far, I haven't seen anything that makes it really sluggish. But mobile phones is just I haven't tested much myself. There is a lot of performance reviews of YUI 3, so this would be the place to go. Also, if you want to build things for YUI, there's a gallery now where you actually can write widgets in YUI 3 and we will promote them for you. So this is a new thing as well, which YUI 2 didn't have. Cool. Any other questions? Shall we have beer and pizza then? Good. Beer, pizza. Thank you.